Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for November 3rd. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and back from Fukuoka. Fine, healthy, and lively is Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy?
Lively, yes. I'm awake.
Yes, you're awake on Sunday morning.
I qualify as evidence of life. You know, like if they find an amoeba on Mars, it's alive. Yeah. That's where I am right now.
Yeah. Well, you look good for it being so early in the morning, so I just wanted to compliment you on that.
Well, happy baseball season ending.
And congratulations to you and your San Francisco Giants. I had a little, I think you didn't notice when I turned it up. These are San Francisco colors for you, buddy.
They're for me. Well, that's kind.
Even though it's a Halloween.
Yeah.
For those who can't see, it's my Scarecrow Halloween hat.
Y'all can see it. John's wearing this goofy looking Halloween. It's like an orange witch's cap with black trim.
Yeah.
So you get some style points for that.
Well, all I say is thank you for bringing the championship back to the National League West.
Oh, well. Well, they have done that with regularity.
Yeah.
They're like the, you know what it reminds me of, oddly enough? They remind me of the Cardinals and the Dodgers in the 60s. And you know, I know you've heard this story before, but in the 1960s, the Cardinals and the Dodgers took turns basically winning the National League. Mm-hmm. And the Giants finished second every year, like a game behind. And then the Cardinals would win one year and then finish last. And then they'd finish first. And the Dodgers would win one year and they'd finish last. And the Giants finished second every year, a game and a half back or half a game back or two games back. And they won a whole bunch more games than either the Dodgers and the Cardinals, but they only went to the World Series once.
Oh, man. It sounds like a lot of cooperation was going on here.
Yeah,
just take turns.
No,
just get to the back of the line.
But I'm sure the Dodgers were happy to oblige if it meant knocking the Giants out of the championship.
Well, I have to say this, watching your San Francisco Giants, we're going to have to start to put a value or quantify heart. I honestly think I made you a believer in this heart thing because those guys battle.
It's not that I was never a believer. It's that when you say they've got more, I want to say step back and say, well, how much more?
Yeah.
I'm a big believer in leadership and heart and teams pulling together
and scrappiness
being selfless.
And being tough. Yeah. Yeah.
But, because I've seen it when it doesn't work. It doesn't it doesn't happen. It doesn't work or it fails that much in Japan. And I think, you know, we talk about all the time I talk about all the time, the players coming here and saying, wow, they're such great teammates. I think what they're saying is not that my teams in America aren't good, but that you don't see teams breaking apart at the seams like you occasionally do in the States.
Mm.
It's a much rarer example here. Okay. Anyway, so that's what's going on here and across the world in baseball.
And on this week's show, we've got a chat with Dennis Sarfate of championship-winning Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks, and we're going to discuss the last three games of the Japan Series and talk about the Sawamura Award winner, Chihiro Kaneko, and more. So let's get started.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so a quick trivia question for me in honor of the Tigers crashing out of the Japan Series. I stumbled across this one.
Okay. I hope you didn't hurt anything.
And that's your clue there.
Okay.
In honor of the Tigers crashing out is your clue.
Well, I'm sure they feel honored. They didn't look very honored on Thursday night. Japanese reporters were saying to Matt, like, how do you feel? How do you feel? Well, how do you think I feel? We just lost.
Yeah, how am I supposed to feel? You tell me. All right, here's the question is, what player holds the rookie record for strikeouts in a season in NPB?
Well, my first inclination would be to go with Kento Sugiyama, but I believe his name was Kento, but I'm going to say not because he was a Seibu Lion. So I'm going to say Inatsu. Yutaka Inatsu.
That is incorrect. The year is 1999. Oh, you're thinking pitcher.
Yes, I was thinking pitcher because normally we with the most strikeouts.
Rookie record for strikeouts in a season. I apologize.
That should narrow it down because there aren't that many Tigers left from 1999. It'd have to be Kosuke Fukudome.
That is correct. That is correct.
The rookie strikeouts during the season by a batter.
By a batter, yeah.
Not by a pitcher.
Not by a pitcher. Oh, you were thinking of pitchers. Yeah, but there are no pitchers for the Tigers who would have been.
Fuhata, see,
maybe.
That's the thing. It's all like a whole different question.
Yeah, you went down the wrong street. I'm sorry. I misled the witness.
Okay, that's all right. Well, it wasn't the first time.
Yeah, 1999, Kosuke Fukudome, 121 strikeouts.
That was a trick, really, was playing for the Dragons at the time. But there weren't that many players, I did think a bit about Fukudome at that point.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so you went. You got a chance to talk to Dennis Sarfate.
I did, indeed. It was a kind of a surprise. Actually, I was waiting. I saw Jason Standridge. I hadn't seen Jason Standridge. We'd missed each other while I was hunting down different things and looking up different people. And, here comes Jason. I saw walking across in from the outfield. And then all of a sudden, out on the other side of my vision, here comes Dennis. But he's closer. He's right on top of me. So I stopped to say hi.
Uh-huh.
And it was very quick. And then during the middle of the interview, Jason walked past. And I said, hi, Jason. And He looked at me like he gave me one of those things like, I'll clean up that Coke stain later.
Wow.
Like, he was, and afterwards, he said, oh, man, I'm sorry. I walked right past. I had something. I was thinking of something. And Dennis said, did you know you just walked right past Jim? You just ignored him. He said, oh, man, I'm so sorry, man.
Hey, man, these guys, they have a lot on their minds, especially in the Japan series. I can really understand that. In a regular season game, I wouldn't.
He was trying to think. He'd come to the ballpark with his dad on their bicycles.
Mm-hmm.
And he was thinking about what to do with the timing of when to put his bicycle away, I think, because I caught him while he was moving his bicycle in the tunnel behind the Hawks dugout.
Okay. All right.
It's not a tunnel. It's more like a promenade.
Right.
Okay, anyway. So, Dennis and I talked, and it's fitting that I think the first person I talked to this season was Dennis. And, he proved that players are not any better at predictions than the rest of us.
Especially me.
But it was interesting because, I was very curious about, what's up with Akiyama quitting like that. And I got a variety of interesting opinions, not enough to make a story, not enough to take to court or even put in a story, but I heard some interesting things.
Mm-hmm.
And that he liked it and that he liked Akiyama, and that was interesting. And because I had different people telling me different things, and I know people who didn't like Akiyama as a manager.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of interesting, and to hear his whole thoughts about the rest is not a surprise. Dennis always says, I need, I saw him in August and I don't want any rest. I don't want any days off. Yeah, I hate interleague. Okay, so anyway, so let's have a listen to what Dennis has to say.
But, it's fun. It's exciting. I like to win it today and tomorrow and go home, but we'll see what happens.
So this is your first time in the Japan series.
Yeah.
And how's the atmosphere for you?
I think it's great. I mean, it was electric in Koshin. I think it's been good here. We've made it interesting all year, so
that's the politically correct answer. That's unusually politically correct for you.
It's never over. So, we went down to the last game with the Buffaloes. We went down to the last game with the Fighters. I'm not taking anything for granted right now. I mean, we could play today, tomorrow, Saturday, Sunday, maybe even tie a game, go game eight. Who knows?
You can go nine even.
Yeah, we can even play nine. Who knows what's going to happen.
You go nine, that one has no inning limit.
Yeah, if we go nine innings, you can go ahead and count me coming to spring camp February 20th.
So what you got to do is start doing winter ball.
Yeah, no.
You say, like at the last minute, you sign with the team at the last second. Oh, you got to play Venezuela winter ball.
I'm going to go play winter ball with my kids in my house.
Okay. Well, speaking of which, how's your condition?
I feel
it's good.
I'm good. I feel strong. I mean, I feel all right. My back's a little tight right now, but I mean, it's October 29th, so I can't expect to be 100%, but, I'm sure everyone's got a little bit of something they're dealing with. But you just got to keep working hard and finish it out.
That's true. You guys didn't get a day off this year, pretty much.
Well, I mean, we got our days off, but, I mean, if we had a game that day, I mean, there weren't too many days off. I mean,
right.
I was warming up, if we score an extra run in the eighth, I was down, but you know, all in all, I mean, it's been a pretty busy year.
Well, I heard the Hawks is a practice on a travel day.
Yeah, I mean, we've done it. We've done it a lot. We've done it a lot in the postseason. I was shocked, you know. We had practice Monday when we got back, and
right.
I think we have practice on Friday if we play that long. So, you know, for me, though, I mean, they don't tell me. I'm not running out here and doing all the work. I come out, I play catch, I go in, I work out, and I go home. So,
hey, you look like you're in a hurry to get off the field.
Yeah, it's better to work out a little bit and do something than just sit in my apartment and
right.
miss my family and all that.
Right.
So, it's always... I just take one day at a time. I don't really worry about anything else.
What's the feeling when you heard of the Tigers have the day off?
Oh, yeah. I thought today was an official practice day. Like, oh, no, Tigers are off. I was like, oh, sure they are.
Yeah.
You know, but,
well, pitchers have played catch.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, I wouldn't want a day off from not playing catch. I don't think that's going to serve your purpose.
Right.
I mean, if it was September and we were getting ready to go into the playoffs something, I would say, okay, maybe a day off. But right now, I mean, even in the big leagues, you wouldn't get a day off right now in the World Series. So, I don't know. I don't think it's any different. I wouldn't want a day off. I'll take my day off once the season's over.
So, how has it been against the Tigers? You get to pitch against them. Did you pitch against them during the regular season?
No, I did once. I got one save against them, and then the next day we lost. And then when we went to Koshin, I was sick. I was sick for like 10 days with the flu. I missed the Hiroshima series and the Hanshin series. So, this is only the second time. You know, but I pitched against them so much when I was with the cart.
Right.
You know, I didn't pitch against them last year with the Lions. We lost all four games, I think, against them.
Torrey Tani's a real tough out still.
He always has been, yeah. He's hit the first pitch both at bats. First pitch fastball slaps the other way. Yesterday, first pitch curveball, you know, little Judy in the center. He's never really hit me hard. It's just, you know, the singles. But if, you know, if you get outs before they can do damage, then that's when it matters. You know, getting the first out of the inning yesterday was huge. Getting the second out was huge. You know, I just, you know, I was tired and missed a spot with Iwamoto. And then, you know, he did a good job of hitting. I mean, I was throwing strikes. They know I'm going to come in and throw strikes. That's the only thing that always teams know, I'm going to throw strikes. I don't walk a lot of guys, and I'm going to come after you with a fastball.
Now, does your mindset or does the feeling change when you got a 5-run lead out there?
It sucks. Yeah. I hate pitching 5-run leads. If you ask me how I felt yesterday or how I felt in Koshin in a 2-1 game, I'd rather pitch in the 2-1 game.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to give up a run in a 2-1 game. But the 5-0 games, they're tough mentally because, I mean, all year me and Igarashi have pitched in one-run games, probably 30 out of my 37 saves, I feel like. I mean, I feel like it was always a one-run game. So, me personally, I don't want 5-0. I hate that because it's mentally you're like, okay, I can give up a run and it's okay. And, you know, you're just trying to throw strikes. You go in there and you're trying to do things and it's like... It's not pressure. It's
you got that out at the back of your mind. Or?
Yeah, you know, and you're just like, just get out of this inning quick. And it's but cold. You know, the 2-1 game, you know, you're like, hey, don't make it. You know, you got to stay sharp. You're making each pitch. You're throwing with conviction. I mean, I guess that's you got to do it every time you pitch. But the 5-run leads are always tough.
Mentally tiring in that respect, and that it's not what you're used to. Or?
No, I mean, I pitched in a lot of games where. 6-1 this
right.
year. Early, later in the year, they realized if I keep doing that, I'm going to pitch in 90 games. So I think they took it easy on me.
Wow.
But I mean,
we're talking about the same team.
Yeah, the first month of the season, I pitched the first game. We won five or six runs. I pitched the game in Sendai. We were up by 6 runs. So, but I mean, they made it up to me later on in the year. Boy, I'll tell you that much. There's a lot of game. When you're on a winning team, you're going to pitch a lot if you're one of the late inning guys. So I knew that coming in that I was going to pitch a lot. So
when you came to the Hawks, had you talked to anybody about working out of the Hawks bullpen?
No, because I knew they had Falke, and Falke always had a special role. You know, he would always get, you know, throw 2 days, get a day off, and that's just not me. I prepare myself all off season to throw every day, and you know I take pride in being able to throw every day. So.
Right.
I never won an off day. The couple times they gave me an off day, I had thrown 5 games in a row or whatever, and they're like, you're off today no matter what. Don't go to the bullpen, which I respect that. You know, that's nice to have where they know they have your back. You know, they're looking out for your best interest.
The reason I asked is because of Brian, because he said that last year and a couple of other people told me that the bullpen here was just ragged. Everybody's arms were dead and things were falling.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you're winning, though, I mean, those guys are going to get abused. Your 7, 8, 9 guys are going to get abused. I mean, if you look at me and Mori and Igarashi and even Okajima for a while there, he was going to be in 60-plus games, you know, until he got hurt. But, you know, you got to prepare yourself. You got to work out. That's why I'm a big believer in working out and off-season training. It helps you get through the season. This is a grind. It's always a grind. I mean, that's our job. That's why we're in the bullpen, and they know we can handle it. That's why starters are pampered and little babies.
In Japan.
I'll get that little cheap dig in there for the starters.
Yeah, well, go ahead, because I talked to Hiroki Kuroda this summer in New York, and he said the hardest thing, he said he was stunned how hard it is to be a starter in the major leagues compared to
totally
Japan.
Totally different, totally different.
See, what, I don't get to go home with my family every
day? Yeah, it's definitely a different atmosphere, a different lifestyle. You know, sometimes I don't even see these starters for a week. And, you know, it's like, oh, hey, guys, I figured you're on my team. But, you know, our bullpen's been strong from day one of this year. I mean, I said it all along, we have the best bullpen. Mm. If you match up, you want to go lefty on lefty, or if you want to go righties, I mean, we have 7 or 8 closers in that bullpen. So.
Now, when I saw you in August.
Uh-huh.
And you said that, you know, the starting rotation was really strong. It seems like almost that backfired, giving everybody
so
much rest.
It did. I think the rotating guys in and out and giving guys extra rest backfired. But, you know, Takeda stepped up, Otanari-san stepped up. And, you know, Jason was in the rotation from day one till the end of the season. So, I mean, losing Wolf hurt, obviously.
Sure.
He's going to get more than – he's going to get his normal 9 or 10 wins. But when you have that many good starters, it's like you want to give everyone a chance, but at the same time, it almost affects guys a certain way. You know, you send a guy out after a good start, and then he don't come back till 10 days later. It affects guys, you know. So I hope next year that they just say, hey, these are our 6 starters, run with them. And if a guy struggles after 5 or 6 starts, or however you want to give them, 3, 4 starts, all right, make a move then. But, rotating guys in and out, it seems like you're giving them rest. But at the same time, not facing hitters and not being in the situation of pitching in games that mean something are very tough.
You're going to have a new manager next year as well, so that'll be a different look.
Sucks, man. I really enjoyed Akiyama-san.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You know, he's had my back since day one. He never lost faith in me or trusted me. I blew a couple saves, and you know, he never once faltered or went away from me. And just, you know, his career was, you know, Hall of Fame.
Sure.
And just the way he coaches and manages, very laid back. Kind of sucks I don't get to play 1 year with him here, but I'm looking forward to whoever they get. I'm sure it's going to step
Kudo's
in just fine.
Kudo's a real good guy.
Oh, is that who it is? That's going to be?
Well, that's what they're trying
Everyone's
to say.
Everyone's saying.
They're waiting off till the series season's
over. They're holding it off like they hold the starting pitchers off for the next day?
Yeah, pretty much.
I know Kudo's had a great career.
Well,
I mean, as far as, you know, what he's done pitching wise, and
he's a real tough guy, and but he's also really open to new ideas.
Yeah.
So.
And I know he trains in the state. I used to see Kudo in the off season when I would train at Fisher Sports. I knew he trained there.
Oh yeah, with Randy Johnson.
Yeah.
He used to be there a lot.
Yeah.
Too, yeah.
So. All right. You know, I think it would be interesting to get. You know, you got to adapt to a new manager, but really, it's all the same thing. I've been 3 teams now with 3 different managers. So, what's the difference of another one, right?
Yeah. I surprised a little bit about Nomura quitting.
Yeah, you know, that shocked me. I don't know what's going on with Kenjiro, but maybe you just had enough. You know, you play for all those years, and then you coach for all those years, the stress. I mean, it can't be fun. I don't want to do it. When I'm done playing, I'm done playing. I'm out of here. I'm out of baseball for good.
Well, you got 4 games at least, at the most, and you'll be out of here. Well,
yeah.
Well, it could be 6.
Could be 6.
This is Japan.
Could be 7. Who knows how many we're going to have.
Well, you can only go 9.
One day at a time. So
okay, well, thanks very
welcome.
Much, and good luck.
Good
stay healthy.
All right, thanks.
Yep.
Okay, well, thank you, Dennis, again, and happy off season to you guys. I saw he had some stuff on Twitter.
You
look pretty happy.
Yeah, in fact, I pulled a picture off that they had posted. I think it was Dennis who posted it. It was a picture of himself, and then in the middle was Jason Standridge, and then Tadashi Setsu on the right. It was a really cool picture. But congratulations, Dennis. Thank you very much, and congratulations to all the Hawks. They did an excellent job.
So, what did you take out of that? It was kind of fun. He's always fun.
He's just great. I mean,
very. I won't say indiscreet, but he pretty much says what he wants. What he wants to say, he doesn't pull too many punches.
He and Jason, they're the same. It's no wonder they're doing so well as a team, because those two guys seem to be really similar, two peas in a pod kind of guys. They work hard. They work really hard, and they don't. They love to work. They love to pitch, and they're very candid. I love it. I found it interesting, though, that he said that the opponents know he's going to throw strikes, and then the next day, so
that's what I meant.
He goes out and gives the umpire an inning off by throwing balls everywhere but the strike zone. But and that was really weird, because I went and looked it up. For him to walk 3 guys in an inning was so rare for him. Now, 6 times this season, he walked 2 guys in an inning. And the last time he actually walked 3 guys in an inning was last year, August 5th. against when he was with the Cebu Lions against the Oryx Buffaloes. He walked three in a game. So that was a long time. So he doesn't do it a lot. But I think last week's show, Michael and I were talking, and I said, look, he gives up base runners, whether it's walks or hit. Mm. He gives up base runners, and he's been doing that. But for him to have, like I said, to give the umpire an inning off like that was very rare. And I don't want to say it was nerves, because I saw something when he pitched the previous game. I think he pitched in game three.
He pitched, yes, in game three.
And he looked, after one pitch, he kind of staggered off the mound and he looked toward center field. And he had this pained expression, and I tweeted it at that moment. It looked like something is bothering him, or it looked like he's in pain. So for him to say that his back was bothering him and that everybody's got something going on at this this time of year was not a surprise for me. We know he's had some back issues in the past. So I'm sure there's a reason why he wasn't quite as sharp. Probably the moment was getting to him as well. Plus the fact that he's got some back issues. Plus the fact that the Tigers were good at hitting fastballs. And we'll get into this later about why the Tigers lost. But I think, you know, they know what he's going to throw, and he knows they know what he's going to throw. So,
well, this is the one game that he got Torii Tani out.
Yeah.
And he was the out in the middle of all that silliness.
Yeah, in the middle of all that stuff.
He was the first out that allowed the double play to end the inning.
Yeah. I also found it interesting that when he talked about Brian Falkenborg's schedule with the team, like he would throw 2 days on, and then if he did that, he would be off the next day automatically, and how Dennis likes to throw every day and he prepares himself to throw every day. I found that really insightful information, because you've talked about before how some, I think it was Yokohama had a bullpen rotation.
That was in 1998.
In 1998. And how,
which the manager was widely criticized for saying, you know, he pretty much announced his middle relievers.
Right.
He says, this guy was the first guy out of the pen. You know, he had like four guys and three of them were going to work.
Right.
In order. And then if they didn't work, the next guy was going to come out in order. And people were criticizing him, but they were really, really effective.
Yeah, that was Hiroshi Gondo, right?
Yeah, it was Hiroshi Gondo. Correct.
Yeah. So I found that interesting. And then, you know, I'm not sure. I believe the more you win, the more you work. You know, that was he said 7, 8, and 9 guys are going to work a lot if you're a winning team. And
well, as opposed to being as opposed to being missing those days when you think you have to keep them ready in case you have a lead.
Well, but I mean, you look at who led the MPB this year in appearances, and it was Koji Fukutani, and I'm not even sure if you remember who he is.
I do. I voted for him for Rookie of the Year.
Oh, okay. He's the Chunichi reliever who was an eighth inning guy and then was moved to the back of the bullpen when Hitoki Iwase got injured. And then Katsuki Matayoshi, also of Chunichi. Now, Fukutani had 72 appearances.
Hold on.
Matayoshi.
Now I'm confusified because I don't remember if I voted for one or the other as Rookie of the Year. I'd have to look.
Kutani throws the fastballs most of the time.
And
Matayoshi throws the frisbees.
Okay, I wouldn't. I'm just looking at how effective they were.
Okay. All right. And then, Matayoshi had 67 appearances. And then that's in the Central League, in the Pacific League. Tatsuya Sato, who obviously was with a winning organization with Oryx, he had only 67 appearances compared to those two guys. So, I mean, I'm not so sure. I'm not sold on the fact that...
No, I think there's many other things that come into play. I think that's just one factor.
Yeah, but I think you work some... I would say you work higher-stress innings because you're in leverage situations a lot. But
correct.
But those guys with the Dragons were their 7-8... And then eventually ninth inning guys. So I think they worked a lot of high stress innings. If you ask them, every inning is a high stress inning, whether you're down by four or up by four. So yeah, I mean, that was interesting. I love the dig he took at the starters by saying pampered and little babies. And in fact, if you remember, I talked to Shige Kazumori, who's now the bench coach with the Dragons, but he was the pitching coach at the time. And I think it was 2008 and, 2007,
mm-hmm.
and Takuya Asao wanted to be a starter,
mm-hmm.
and Morty said, okay, yeah, you can start. We'll put you as a starting pitcher, and the only reason, Morty said, the only reason that Asao, who ended up winning the MVP eventually, I think it was 2011, the only reason he wanted to be a starter is because he wanted to frolic and have fun for 5 days in between his starts and just goof off. And that was it. You know, if he was coming out of the bullpen, or if he was going to pitch middle relief or be the setup guy, he's going to have to work a lot more.
Yep. Well, Randy Messenger was saying that the other day. Same thing. It's like I get to go home and, I have dinner with my family 6 days a week, except on the occasion, you know, if they have a 2-week road trip and he has to go with the team for a few days.
Right. Well, you know, and when he took that dig, I'm like, well, you know, you kind of just let it roll. I'm like, wait a second, man. He's ripping on all the starting pitchers, man.
I was going, yeah, because that's what the starting pitchers told me. That's what Kuroda told me. So I'm going, I have to agree with you. I mean, it's much easier being a starter in Japan than it is in other instances. So I think it is, you know, it's the way it works in Japan.
Yeah. I mean, you're throwing once a week and you pretty much know when you're going to throw and where you're going to throw and who you're going to throw against.
Well, I would stay away from throwing, knowing when you're going to throw. Yeah, that's if you're an established rotation guy and your manager isn't Hideki Kuriyama trying to figure out what the matchups ought to be for you so he can mess up his rotation.
Right. And then there's rain and there's guys getting injured and there's other things. There are other factors, but yeah, of course. But pretty much, you know, you pretty much know. Okay, what about you? What was the biggest thing for you that stuck out?
Well, that was those two things. You know, that I was talking about. That you mentioned, one, his predictions for the series that he wasn't going to walk anybody and that it, you know, would probably go the distance. I think that's just being wary, you know, not wanting to be boastful, perhaps, and knowing how hard it is.
Right.
But sure, that and actually the talking about the starting pitchers and the workload, those are the things that really stuck in my mind. Of course, that and talking about Akiyama, because it was Falkenborg who thought Akiyama really didn't know how to manage the bullpen. But I'll tell you, speaking to the physical training coach for the Hawks, who looks after more the relievers than the pitchers,
uh-huh,
than the position players. I mean, he does work with all, but the pitchers are the high maintenance because of the effort they have to put out in a single game.
Right.
He said that it wasn't so much Akiyama. It was a case of the team, the front office culture,
mm-hmm,
that causes a lot of the problems with the Hawks bullpen. And essentially what he said is that, you know, every player gets a report card with the Hawks.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure it's in some ways similar. Mm-hmm. But every player gets a report card on each game. They're evaluated. And the guys in the bullpen are evaluated whether they go into the game or not.
Really?
And they're evaluated. You get points. You get more points if you warm up three times. If you warm up three times and you don't go into a game, you get points for that.
Hmm. Interesting.
So guys get up and throw, they get more points. And it's like they had guys going nuts in the bullpen.
Just getting up and throwing.
Just to get extra, you know, to get basically salary leverage at contract time.
Hmm. Interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, and of course, we don't know what kind of throwing they're doing exactly. You could be.
No, we don't. But they're actually, what I mean when I say that, they're on the mound. They do know. They count the pitches they throw in the bullpen.
Right.
Or they count how many times they get up. And so they're not going to get up and just like do a soft toss. They're going to get up and throw to a catcher,
mm-hmm,
or else it won't count. So basically, they're burning their arms out in the bullpen because the system encourages it.
Wow. That's really interesting.
And he said that. Apparently, one of the issues with the bullpen had been they wanted basically Akiyama's not a real good he was the only person who told me this. Several people said Akiyama's not really good at communicating with people. He's kind of the strong silent type.
Mm-hmm.
And that people who would like make suggestions,
uh-huh,
in meetings instead of like asking him first and clearing it with him before they made suggestions.
Okay.
One guy made a suggestion in the front of a meeting, you know, why don't we do this, which is, you know, like, why don't we give these guys a day off because they look ragged? You know, they got this answer like, well, I'm the manager here.
Yeah.
I'll decide when people look ragged and need a day off. And that guy got demoted at the end of the season.
Nice. Anybody else got an idea?
Exactly. Anybody else want to speak up? Now's your chance.
Interesting. That's good stuff. That's really good insight.
Yeah, there was a lot of good stuff in Fukuoka.
So. All right. Well, let's get to the games again. Now, congratulations to the Hawks. They won the series in 5 games, and they made it look easy at times. Not necessarily on the scoreboard, but the games they won. They won 4 straight games, and they got out in front by scoring first in all 4 of those games, and then they just kind of held on. Mm-hmm. Let's start with Game 3. The series moved to Fukuoka Yahoo Auction Dome. It was a 5-1 victory for the Hawks. And I tweeted it. Kenji Otonari, the pitcher with the ossified yellow ligaments illness or ailment that he has, the same one that Seiichi Hoshino, the Rakuten Eagles, suffered from, and that's probably what drove him into retirement this year. He throws 7 scoreless innings, 3 hits, 6 strikeouts. He walked a guy, and it looked like he was having the time of his life out there on the mound. He was just enjoying every pitch.
Well, he did. And he said that. He said in the post game in the Hawks dining hall, where the Hawks do their post game interviews, the player interviews. He said, "This might not be a good thing to say, or this might sound bad, but I was here to enjoy myself."
Yeah, and he genuinely.
You don't want to say that, Jimmy. You don't want to say. I have to say, this was brutally hard, and I'm gritting my teeth to do everything for my team. You can't say, if we lost. You know, if I pitched well, I did my best and we lost, I'm okay with that. I wasn't going to enjoy it either way.
Exactly, yeah.
You're not allowed to say that kind of stuff, but he was saying that, so that was kind of interesting.
I mean, he was hitting spots. He was using this changeup to disrupt timing.
Was nasty.
He was masterful.
And the thing is, he's got a dinky little fastball.
Yeah.
134 kilometers per hour, mostly. I don't think he got higher than that. He was in that area, 131, 134. He was pretty consistent. But he was hitting his spots like a madman.
Yeah.
Like he had the thing on a – it was like a little wire-guided low-velocity missile. and then he threw his – you know, he did the changeup the first time through the lineup. And the second time through the lineup, or maybe it was the third, he started going through the he started using his slider, and he got into trouble, not because the slider wasn't any good, which is what it looked like to me, because he couldn't throw it anywhere near the strike zone.
Mm-hmm.
But it drove the – it was really a distraction for the hitters, because I think they were kept looking for the changeup.
Yeah. I don't know.
And all of a sudden, this is a different look. And he fell behind in counts, and so it cost him a couple of times, but it worked out like a charm.
Yeah, I mean, he looked like – I tweeted this too. He looked like the best pitcher in Japan all of a sudden. He had been really good. He had been really effective all season, but
season is kind of
– I know. It's a misnomer in some
sense. Yeah, because he came back to the active roster in the second half of July.
Yeah, late in July. And then he would pitch, and then as we mentioned on the show last week, he would be deactivated, which meant he couldn't pitch for 10 days. But then he'd come back and pitch and then be deactivated. So – I think,
but he was really effective doing
but
that.
But he was good at doing that. And then, like I said, he's pitching on short rest when he pitched in the PLCS, and then he was pitching basically on short rest when you look at all the rest that he had in the regular season compared to what he normally – or to compared to what a normal pitcher gets and compared to what he had gotten all season. He was pushed to the brink in the sense that he was working on short rest. So, but still.
In game 4?
Well, remember, he pitched twice in the PLCS.
That's true. He was on 6 days rest. He was on 7 days rest on game 4.
Yeah, so, but it, compared to what he got during the regular season, he was on short rest.
And basically, he was ready to go because he didn't really work very hard. He had very few situations where he had to pitch out of the stretch, and I think he threw 90-something pitches or something.
Right.
And
So I think the reason that the Tigers lost this game was because of Otonari, but they helped him out. And a lot of people are pointing to the mistakes that they had. Now, Tsuyoshi Nishioka had a poor fielder's choice moment in the 6th inning. He backed up and on a ball and then tried to get the fastest runner on the field. He tried to get him at second base. And instead of throwing across the field from third base to get Seiichi Uchikawa, who's probably one of the slowest guys on the field, other than Lee Dai-ho. And then Hanshin catcher Kazunari Tsuroka failed to block a pitch that, first in the first place, it wasn't that bad a wild pitch. I've seen a lot worse. All he had to really do is move over and get his chest protector and sort of block it, but he didn't do that. And not only that, he let the ball get away so far that a guy like, and you called him pudgy. Yuki.
Stocky.
Stocky, pudgy. I think they're in the
same.
Yes. Yeah.
He is.
And he's
always run well. And I also always say the reason he surprises me
is because he does. And yeah.
Because he's fast.
Yeah, well, he waddled his way all around the bases to score from second.
No, I'll tell you. He's a guy who doesn't look like he should be fast, but he is. I mean, I can't comment on his speed. He was making self-deprecating jokes about his speed during the playoffs.
Right.
But I remember him from him playing center field and right field for the Yokohama Bay Stars, and he could scoot. You know, he's going after balls in the gap, and I'm going, that little stocky guy can't get it, but he could move. He was a little Japanese Kirby Puckett out there.
So I hearken back to the Randy Messenger interview that we had earlier in the season where he said he liked Fuji the best because he blocked the plate pitches in the dirt. Mm. And that was why he wanted him to be behind the plate. But, you know, when Tsuruoka let that ball get by and he wasn't hitting anything anyway, I was thinking, man, you know, Yu Takawada, the manager of the Hanshin Tigers, really should get him out of the game. And eventually, I think he lifted him for a pinch hitter later on in the game, but Tsuruoka never saw the light of day after that. And I tweeted the water should bench him and never put him in. And I don't think Yu Takawada is reading my tweets, but I think he's reading Tsuruoka pretty well. And that guy, remember when he joined the Tigers, he said, I'm an old rookie because he's a veteran player. And, that was his thing, but he would just
Better him than Togashi Hidaka.
Yeah, he was awful. He was
remember
awful.
Him?
Yeah, I remember him, but I don't know. Maybe he would have caught one of those. I mean, I don't know. It was just awful. So I pointed to those two plays, obviously, with Yoshimura coming around to score. That was a big play, but
sure.
And the Tsuruoka part. But I think Otonari, the way he was pitching, it just didn't matter because they didn't score.
Right.
So,
well, they had to wait till Serfate got onto the mound for the score.
Right.
When they were losing 5-0.
Okay.
And the other thing about this play is, of course, the game could have been more of a blowout, but Yamato Maeda saves a run.
Yeah, and I tweeted, you know, he's making great plays in the field, and he eventually made another great play, a diving catch on a line drive hit right out. And in this game, it was Uchikawa, right? He hit that ball. And he comes in on it and dives and makes a catch. And I'm like, well, it's too bad Yamato can't bring his glove to the plate.
that was in the fourth inning. Basically, they've got a couple of runs. I think it's runners on second and third and two out, first and third and two outs. And, you know, and the Hawks are leading 2-0. It's the fourth inning.
Mm-hmm.
And he keeps it from being 3-0.
Yeah, or more. Yeah, it was a great
play. With Lee Dehokam coming up. So,
Okay. Yeah.
So that was the first one. Okay, so we move along to the next day.
And that was a 5-2 victory for the Hawks. And this was the game for me that I thought the Hawks were going to lose. The Tigers were going to win this one and make sure they're going to get a game. Mm-hmm. They're going to get the series back to Koshien. And Kenichi Nakata walks everybody. Everybody who came to the plate, he said, would you like a base, sir? A first base for you? How about a ball outside for you, sir? I mean,
Not only did he walk guys, but you know he tied a record twice with consecutive walks, with three consecutive walks in an inning.
So yeah, he did. He walked the bases loaded twice.
He did it twice.
Yeah.
And so he set a new record by walking three guys in a row in two different innings.
Yeah, what a mess. And eventually, Akira Nakamura hits a walk-off home run in the 10th off. Off
Osen Wong,
who just pumped fastball after fastball.
That's what he was doing all postseason, pretty much.
Yeah, but he missed. He missed, and I'm just thinking sometimes you gotta get guys' timings off. And this is the thing about Ryota Rocket Boy Igarashi now that he's a veteran guy. He's doing all kinds of things to throw guys' timing off. He's throwing a knuckle curve. He's throwing a fastball, but. He's doing a quick step when there's nobody on base. Or a slide step, I should say, when there's nobody on base, or he's quick pitching guys. He's just trying to throw their timing off. And some of these young pitchers need to take heed and just see what these veteran guys are doing and why they're sticking around. Because you can't keep pumping fastball after fastball to guys like this. And they even knew that he was going to throw it on the inside part of the plate. He didn't even try to go away.
Well, this is the thing, you know, Igarashi, of course, he's old enough to these guys. He could probably walk around and say, let me show you how it's done, Sonny. But he looks like he's about 28.
Yeah.
He looks about 8 years younger than he is.
28. No. He looks 30-ish to me, but yeah.
Well, I don't know. He's I don't know. Anybody who looks their age after all he's been through is pretty amazing to me.
All right.
And I also remember he doesn't look any different from what he did when he was throwing, 100 miles an hour. So.
Right. And so, again, there were some mistakes the Tigers made that you could point to, and the little mistakes on the bases. I think Takashi Toritani, the day before, had gotten thrown out at second trying to advance on a pitch that kind of bounced away. And then this game, Kosuke Fukudome knocked in the tying run in the third inning, but he gets gunned down at second base trying, for no good reason, I remind you, to stretch it to a double. And, you know, there's a fine line that separates the being very aggressive and then being risky. And
This is the game that the guy who set the tone for this game, well, at least in the beginning, was Yuki Inagita, who the Hawks, just at the very end of the season and then in the playoffs, they shook up their batting order. And they put Inagita, who began his career kind of as a pinch runner leadoff guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said, oh, well, he can hit for power, so let's bat him fifth and sixth. And he did that for most of the season. And he stopped hitting a bit at the end of the season. They put him in the leadoff spot. And all of a sudden, he's like, look at me, I'm a leadoff man. I can run. And he had this double that shouldn't have been a double.
Yeah.
And then he had a really good game on the bases, and Fukudome's like going, I'll show that guy who can play baseball. I'll show him, I'm out.
Yeah. And someone tweeted to me, and I apologize when I don't remember the name, but I said, Fukudome trying to stretch that for no reason. And the person said, yeah, well, he thought he was Fukudome of 2006. He probably did run fairly well back then.
He looked like Fukudome of 1999 in the first inning when he came up with two outs and the bases loaded.
Yeah, but Fukudome of 2006 wouldn't have tried that because I think the manager would have eaten him up and spat him out. So
that's true.
And so, but I think there were a couple of things. I think a lot of balls hit to left field. It just seemed that the Hawks had it in their minds that they were going to run on Matt Merton. They were just going to run on. They were going to challenge him, whether it was a hit to the outfield with a runner on second or, in that situation, hitting a ball that was kind of shallow. I mean, kind of floated over third base and then landed softly on that turf. And I think they were going to challenge. And I think that was what their game plan was to make guys throw them out. The only guy who has a really good arm we saw was Yamato in the outfield, and the other guys were pretty much iffy. Not iffy, but I mean not proven great throwers, I should say.
Well, I would say Fukudome was a proven great thrower, but he's been so inconsistent, and he's always been a guy who's I don't know if I mentioned it, but you know, it used to be early in the season. You never run on him in April and May. Wait until August. he's got nothing left in that gun. He's firing blanks.
Yeah.
So, but he does have enough to keep people honest a few times. But yes, basically that game evolved into Kenny Chinakata's got nothing. Inori Iwata's got nothing. And then the dust cleared and we've got a 2-2 tie. The Hawks get into the bullpen and Iwata's just tooling along, and we've got a 2-2 tie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, Iwata, the manager of the Hanshin Tigers, I love the fact that he made some changes and that he didn't sit around. And whenever he had a chance, he tried to be aggressive. He had a bunch of lemons. He was trying to make lemonade. And I just don't think he had the ingredients to make a lemon meringue pie with the lemons, but he was trying. I knew he was going to put Ryota Arai in the DH spot coming in or moving over to Fukuoka anyway, but I love that he decided to go right away and make a change to Sekimoto. And not that Sekimoto was a great answer, but.
Yeah, Sekimoto,
they had to get
Tsuyoshi after his game three. They had to get Tsuyoshi Nishioka out of the defense.
Yeah, that was.
So basically, they brought in, they DH'd Nishioka, in which he did really, his bat really came alive after they made him the DH.
Yeah.
And Sekimoto, who had his one, his first career Japan Series hit, I think he's 1-for-16 now game four.
Yeah,
game five.
He tried, but the thing we talked about on the show last week with Michael Westbay saying, mm-hmm. hey, look, you know, Gomez and Merton are the guys, and if they're not going to hit, if they're going to hit in the double plays, or if they're not going to be productive, it's going to be hard for those guys to score. And it was, and they didn't help themselves on the bases. They didn't play, I mean, in those pressure situations with the defense, they didn't make those plays. So then they found themselves in that game in a situation where, I mean, this one could have been over early with the way Iwata was pitching early, but he managed to settle down, find a spot,
And the Hawks, and again, this what saved the game for the Hawks was, well, two things. I mean, besides the Tigers, but I think, again, Nakata, it's so funny because Nakata had this game in the playoffs in which he had no control until the bases were loaded. And then it's like, oh, man, I better start executing my pitches.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, with the bases loaded, he just teased guys into putting themselves out.
Yeah.
And it worked like a charm. And after three innings, Akiyama said, wow, he did really well with nothing. Let me get rid of that guy.
Yeah.
And he brought in the now Higashihama, who's a second-year guy. He's rarely pitches, but he was really lights out. And then they go to the back of the bullpen guys, and it's a tie game.
Yeah. Well, and then I just thought in the 10th inning, because I know you have to play 15 if the game stays tied. So I think Wada was thinking, how many outs can I squeeze out of Yuya Ando? And I think he just kind of should have started the inning. O really hadn't worked that much. I would have seen two innings in his future anyway, and then go from there. And other kids had thrown well for them back at Koshien. So I just thought it was the wrong move, and he ends up bringing O in a situation where he's going to have to throw fastballs. And
right.
And so Nakamura hits the home run, and now they're a game away from winning it all. And so we go to game five, and it ends up being a 1-0 victory for the Hawks in the game.
Scoreless through 7.5 innings.
Yeah, in the game I call the running lane blues for the Tigers. It was weird. I think a lot of debate sparked on social media after this game. And, you know, watching it with the naked eye, by the time and what happens is Tsuyoshi Nishioka gets called for interference as he's running to first base on a 3-2-3 double play attempt. And the throw from the catcher, Hosokawa, hits Nishioka and bounces off into foul territory, and the tying run comes around to score, and the Tigers think they have new life. And the umpire, the home plate umpire, whose call it is signaling, no, the runner interfered, out, out, out. And there was a moment of just mass confusion, and then all of a sudden the Hawks players kind of were subdued in their in their celebration,
yeah,
but they knew that the game was over and that they had won.
Right. Well, the reason there was some confusion is because the runner from second had to come around, and the play went, barring the obstruction, 3-2-3-2, because after they the ball it was 3-3-2-4-2 because the throw came from the second baseman who was backing up the play back to home, and the runner from second was safe. And so the Tigers thought they had tied the game.
Right.
And then the Hawks started celebrating, and then, you know, so the Hawks are going on to celebrate, and the Tigers, Wada's going on to complain with the umpires that the game should be tied and not their season should be over.
Right. And I don't want to be a prisoner in the moment, but I just thought it was the weirdest ending to any, except maybe one Super Bowl I can recall with you actually watching the game with me. But the weirdest ending to a championship I think I've ever seen in my life. And the moment that it happened, I kept saying, well, no, because watching on TV, all you could see was the fact that Nishioka was in the lane when he hit the bag.
Sure.
But
Everything's gone.
Yeah, Westbay was watching a different channel, and he emailed me, and I saw people on Twitter and I said, I think they blew the call. And then when you see the 90 feet view from behind the plate of Shioka running, you can see that he's clearly on the inside part of. Now here's the other thing. This rule really drives me nuts because nobody ever runs. The running lane is the last 45 feet up until you get to the bag at first base, not the first 45 feet. And no one runs anywhere near the lane, and nobody, you never see runners running in that lane and then stepping to the left because the running lane is actually in foul territory.
Correct.
They would have to run and then step to the left to step onto the bag. And you never see that. They run straight on the line and they step on the bag. So if everybody does it that way all the time, let's either put the line somewhere else or do something, because obviously it was a poor throw. Had he been in the running lane, the throw still would have been on his backside and it would have gone into foul territory. So why are we penalizing a guy for doing everything that he normally does because the throw is coming from behind him?
Well, the ball clipped him, and that's the problem. Now, two things. One is, yes, it was a correct call.
Yeah, it was a correct call.
Because if he doesn't clip that ball, he's got a chance to make a mound, and he's going to be out.
I think the ball's going to get there first, but I think even if he's in the running lane, I still think that ball's going to hit him.
What you also see, and I think this is, at first I thought it was unintentional, but I think he's taking up as much space.
Definitely.
Yeah, he's almost leaning into he's leaning to his left. And I think that might have swayed the umpire because he's running at an angle almost to take away the throw. And so when you see that, and I think that's what the umpire sees, it was pretty. At first, I thought it wasn't intentional, but when I watched the video, I think it was. I think he was trying to take away any throw at first base. So the answer is yes. That's where that was the perfect place to make the call. Now the problem is not that call. Mm-hmm. The problem is not calling that play during the regular season.
You mean on anybody who's making a throw from? Whether it's
pretty
the pitcher
much,
or the
well,
catcher
much,
or third baseman who's trying to make a throw to first base when someone's running.
Right. Basically, what they tell you is if somebody's on the wrong side of the line and you have no play at first, you hit them in the back.
Yeah.
And then hope for a call because you don't know – because you can hit them in the back and the umpire will say, I'm sorry, I don't go with that rule.
Yeah.
It's an option. It's basically a rule that's an option, and that's the problem.
Well, the other problem for me is I think, and the coaches in high school, they teach the runners to run, like you said, to cut down the angle. So run as much in the outside that running lane. But once the running lane starts, which, like I said, is the last 45 feet of that stretch, you don't see guys running in that running lane. Ignored.
Of course.
So if it's ignored all the time, why should it not be ignored when a guy makes a bad throw?
Sure.
I just say take that rule out.
I think what they need to do is they need to find a way to make it work. Because I think it's a good rule, but they just need to wait. You know, they can have another one, which is you have a bag on the inside. Have you heard that one? The bag in foul territory or where the runner can touch.
Oh, the bag
so
outside
actually
the line?
In, yeah, you put two bags next to each other.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard that one. In
that
which
makes
case,
sense.
The bag on the foul side is the one you're running for. So that takes that out of the equation. No,
that
it was
sense.
The catcher, Hosokawa, had the ball on the plate. He took an extra step towards the pitcher's mound. He threw. He had a good angle. And when Nishioka leaned into the ball, it clipped him ever so slightly. It deflected it just enough. And I think that between him coming in and probably as much as him clipping the ball, the fact that Nishioka was now blocking the guy's view of the throw.
Well, that too.
Screening him.
Yeah, he was screening. But like I said, when I watched the first in live action, I could see that he was pretty much either on the line or almost in that running lane. The thing was, is he started out inside the first baseline, mm-hmm. and he veered when he got closer to the bag. He veered toward the running lane. So he was actually, by the time he got to first base, he was in the running lane. But the problem was he was outside the running lane when Hosokawa was making the throw.
Right.
Thus cutting down that angle. But yeah, so that's why I said I still think the throw was poor and that was going to hit him because where he was actually standing when the ball made contact was not so bad. Not bad enough for
to make the call. I think it was, but you know, again, what I'm going to say is I certainly agree with you in the sense, and what my point is this, because the rule is not always enforced.
Right.
It makes it very hard to enforce it. Right. From a technical, and then I think we're on the same page there. They have to call it consistently.
Yeah.
You can't, and that's why I said it becomes an option.
Mm.
It's like the phantom double play at second base. That's up to the umpire to decide whether he's going to call it or not, and that leads to trouble because he's going to say, "Well, let's see, the home team's going to get really angry with me, and the only person who's going to get angry with me is this one runner who's out."
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with the home team.
Right. So, Hanshin argued the call, the manager argued the call, and they kind of didn't want to leave the field, and it was just kind of a weird, surreal kind of ending to the series,
yep.
But congratulations to the Hawks, they won it. I think, you know, I summed up...
And this is a game also that shouldn't have been close. If it's not for Yamato Maeda, this is a...
Yeah, he made another diving catch.
Yeah, this isn't a scoreless game going into the seventh inning. The Hawks are leading 2-0.
Well,
at least.
Yeah, for me, overall, you were there, so you might know a little bit better in terms of what was going on with each pitch. But it just seemed to me the entire series after game one that the Hawks had their game plan with the pitching and they knew what they wanted to do and they were going to attack with off-speed pitches. They were going to skim the zone with some fastballs, but they didn't want to throw fastballs for strikes and that they were going to use off-speed pitches to keep their timing off. And if they could hit him, they could hit him. The other thing was that I think we talked about the fact that Mauro Gomez was a really good batter when it came to pitches on the inside, the inner half, or even in off the plate.
Yeah, the only pitches he saw inside were ones that were 3 inches and they were up around his neck and then on his hands.
Yeah, like I said, they were skimming the zone or bouncing balls in front of the plate.
A lot, yeah. They had a really good plan against him.
And the Tigers could not hit these off-speed pitches. And I know Kosuke Fukudome is notorious for not being able to hit anything really but fastballs unless you hang something in his eyes. The whole team turned out to be that way. They could not hit off-speed pitches. So you look at the plays that they messed up on the bases and you look at the situations where they couldn't stop a wild pitch. But I think in the end it was because they couldn't hit these off-speed pitches.
I think that's absolutely true. And I think, well, of course, in the other side of that, it's great to have a plan, but if you don't execute it, then you're Kenichi Nakata with the bases loaded.
Right.
What happened was he was the only guy who couldn't execute in Fukuoka for the Hawks.
But even then, they didn't hit him.
Right.
He walked guys. They got a sacrifice fly and a single or something, and they got a run. Yeah. But they didn't get the hits at these big times in the game, and
that's right, because he did execute at crucial moments. But the other guys, they worked him over like crazy. I mean, they started in game two with Shota Takeda with a curveball that they couldn't hit. Then they go to it's like, oh man, we're glad we rid of him. We don't want to see that curveball. So they get the change up the next game. And then Nakata fools him into thinking they can win. And then they come back with Setsu, who's been just lousy.
Yeah.
Setsu has been lousy for most of this year. I'm amazed this guy has a winning record.
Yeah.
He's 9-8 in the season, but he's done nothing since September 1st. And he can't throw strikes. And he can't do anything. And all of a sudden, he's got the curveball working. And he's got that sinker, which looks like a screwball.
Yeah, sinker. And, but he just showed him the sinker. He stayed with off-speed stuff. I mean,
he threw the sinker at the, you know, below the knees. And it's got that funky little, it's probably more like a changeup than a, I don't know what it is. But it's essentially uses it as a changeup. And he doesn't throw it in the zone. And it's just driving these guys mad.
Yeah.
And they had a plan and they executed it. And the Tigers looked like, I mean, they got around to their plan, but they had enough trouble that, and the Hawks just, their hitters had really, really, really good at bats, pretty much, with the exception of Iwata. And I mean, I thought they had good at bats against Randy Messenger too for a lot of that game.
Yeah.
But,
I mean,
Messenger was really good.
Yeah. So I missed again. I was wrong.
Yay!
I'm used to it. Doesn't hurt me none.
Well, I'll tell you, it's like people say, oh, well, the Hawks did this and the Hawks did that and the Hawks did that against the Pacific League. And I still don't think you can look at these two leagues and say, oh, well, they should be even, because I don't think they are.
Yeah. All right. Congratulations.
Well, they're not even winners. Because I don't think they are. I'm just saying all the evidence suggests that they're not.
Right. I understand. I was just, you know, I picked the Tigers because I felt good about the way they were playing and I didn't feel good about the way the SoftBank was not executing and not, but they put it together and they put it together at the right spot.
You know,
just like Dennis said.
I'm going to put two and two together, and before we leave the Hawks and consign them to history, the whole issue about Akiyama's quitting.
Hmm.
Okay, now Akiyama comes out, and I know you talked about this. He quits the day before the Hawks begin their playoffs. And it's really weird because, you know, successful managers, I can almost understand Kenjiro Nomura wanting to get out of the cart because they've got an owner who's always telling them how to run the team.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, oh, it doesn't bother me like Marty did, like it bothered Marty. He told me in August or September. I said, okay, I guess it didn't.
Hmm.
Anyway, so he announced that, and then Akiyama comes out and says, well, he's won the Japan championship. Now, what happened, two things that happened that are really weird. One is they had this horrible losing streak. And I heard that during this losing streak, the Hawks team president apparently reminded Akiyama that he was fond of making these little pronouncements. This is a banker. And he was fond of saying things like, SoftBank doesn't accept losing any games. SoftBank, we must win every game because that's what our corporate culture is about.
Right.
This is a guy who SoftBank hired away from Sumitomo Bank, I think, about 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So he's an expert on company culture.
Yeah.
And another thing was, I'm having thoughts about this whole bit about let's keep, you know, it worked for Otonari to send him back. This is a guy who hadn't pitched, who barely pitched in the farm team for a year, for a little over a year, and now he's on the first team. And it worked. It made sense for him to come back on long rest every start after his back surgery. And I have to think somebody in the front office said, let's try that with all the pitchers.
Mm.
Let's try that with everybody except Jason Standridge. But basically three of their four starters were basically rotating in and out of the minor leagues. And I think that became an issue. And I think the front office may well have pushed that button and just forced that issue on the manager.
Mm.
And then you're in a losing streak where they're telling you don't lose. And I think, wow, if I'm Akiyama, I've had enough of this stuff.
Yeah.
If that's the way it went down, I wouldn't be too surprised. Now, I don't know that's the way it went down, but given what I heard this week in Fukuoka, it could well have, you know,
it sounds plausible. It sounds plausible.
I give it that about a 5% chance of being somewhere close to the real truth.
Well, on Saturday, they named Kimiyasu Kudo the new manager, and he's a former pitcher, so we'll see if it really is something to do with that, or we'll see how we will definitely keep an eye on it next year, but obviously we'll see if the philosophy changes or if he adheres to that, or how they go moving.
I have to ask some questions. I'm going to go back to Fukuoka next weekend.
Mm, okay. Well, anytime's a good time to go back to Fukuoka. All right.
I haven't been there for a few days.
So. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the Sawamura Award now. Chihiro Kaneko gets the Sawamura Award, and he was named the best pitcher in Japan, the Buffalo's ace. He's the first pitcher to win the award in this franchise's history, including its days as Hankyu. He's the first.
Well, there's a good reason why they never won as Hankyu. Do you know, this is a trivia question for you, John. Do you know why the Hankyu Braves never won a Sawamura Award?
No, because
it used because through 1989, the Sawamura Award was for Central League pitchers.
Haha. That makes sense.
So in 1989 was the year the Hankyu Braves became the Oryx Braves.
I see. All right. Yeah. Good trivia. Good piece of good nugget of information. Now,
and the first Pacific League winner was Hideo Nomo. Okay, so there we go.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay, Nomsy. All right, so he led the Pacific League with 16 wins and had a 1.98 ERA. And let's face it, this is sort of a 2-year achievement, I think, for him.
Right.
Because Kaneko did really, really well last season, but it was eclipsed by the incredible season that Masahiro Tanaka put together. So he was invisible. But I don't think he hit all the benchmarks he was supposed to.
Not this year. Last year he did.
Yeah, Kaneko. Yeah, this year didn't hit the benchmarks this year, but last year he did.
And Tanaka didn't.
Yeah.
He didn't have the complete games.
He didn't have the complete games. Yeah, and that right. was the thing. And I think you're supposed to have 10, and they let him slip through with 4 this year. And then the innings pitched, I think he had 190 something innings pitched. He was short on that.
Like 2 1/3 innings or something.
But definitely a 2-year achievement for him. So congratulations.
Yeah, he became the second guy who lost the award in recent years. Last year, he's the second guy who didn't win the award despite being the only pitcher who cleared all the benchmarks.
Yeah. All right.
And the other one was Yu Darvish when Iwakuma won.
Right.
Darvish's daddy was going, wait, hold on a second. These are the rules. My boy passed all the rules. You're telling me he didn't get an A?
Yeah.
Tell me again. Okay.
All right. So, good for him. He's talking about moving on he's going to use free agency. Perhaps he might be posted. Now, we talked about this before we started taping. I said that I've talked to a couple of guys in the States, one who says that basically Kaneko is on the radar, but he looks like a guy who's going to sign with a Japanese team. And then the other person said, yeah, we know how well he's done, but he's 31.
And which I'd say that was what people said about Iwakuma.
Mm-hmm.
The similar pitchers, I always say they're similar. They're not actually that similar, but they have similar builds. They're slight guys. They look like the wind would blow them over. Kaneko, the difference is that Kaneko doesn't have that wipeout pitch. What he's got is a lot of he's Makun light.
Mm.
In that he's got a bunch of pitches that are really good, and he's got superior command, and nothing bothers him.
Right. Now, but you said before we started taping that it's possible that Oryx might post him.
Yeah, they might post him for the reason that if he decides to stay with the team next year and he stays in Japan, or if he decides to become a free agent this year, which I doubt because of the timing, he has to declare free agency by – he said, first of all, he actually indicated that he's not going to file for free agency because he said he wants to think about asking the team to post him. And he also wants to pitch against major leaguers first. Now, he can't do both. He can't become a free agent if he waits until he pitches in the Nichibei Yakkyu, because that doesn't start until the 12th, and the deadline for filing for free agency is the 11th. So that won't happen. So he won't be a domestic free agent this year unless that's what he wants to do.
Yeah, Nichibei Yakkyu is the games against Japan and the major leaguers who are coming
over. Correct. He's going to play for the Japanese national team against a bunch of major league all-stars, including Hisashi Iwakuma. Okay, so now here's the thing. If he becomes a free agent in Japan, or I just saw that he signed, he held out in his contract last year for 10 days. Oryx wanted to sign him to a multi-year deal. He ended up signing for $2 million for 1 year. Now, Oryx will stand, if he becomes a free agent in Japan, they'll stand to make about $3 million from him. And if they post him, they will make much more than $3 million. So my guess is if he says to Oryx, post me, they'll say, okay, just, you know, good luck. Have a good career.
And they'll post him.
And I think they'll post him because and then they might say, well, give us $19.5 million. And the major league teams will go, wow, $500,000 discount. We'll take him.
Yeah. Interesting. All right, moving right along, we're going to have to get out of here quickly. I see the producer is looking at me, giving me the looks. Your favorite moment of the season this year? I asked you, I think this is becoming...
Mine, I'll have to stick with what sticks in my pea brain the best, which is something that happened very recently, which was Atsunori Inaba's finish to the season.
Mm.
And I don't mean, of course, the send off in Sapporo Dome was superb. It was a great production. It felt bad for Makoto Kaneko. It was like, and Makoto Kaneko's here too.
Yeah, but, I kept saying, yeah, They had his jersey up in the dugout like he was dead.
Yeah, like he was had a stroke. I mean, Inaba's playoff performance coming off the bench for the Fighters in the playoffs, he was 3 for 6. He had basically 3 game-changing hits.
Mm-hmm.
And the Oryx fans were cheering him when he came on. And I'm going, you know, you don't know what you're cheering. You're cheering for the devil. He's going to crush your team.
Right, yeah. What are people doing?
He did. He was a big part of why Oryx won that. Well, he was a small part, as a pinch hitter can only be. But he played a role in Oryx finishing their season early.
Yeah.
So good for him. The send-off he got both in Oryx and Osaka and in Fukuoka was first rate and very fitting for a first rate individual.
Yep. There were two instances that really stuck out for me. One was the dueling no-nos that were going on May 10th and, with Brandon Dixon with the Oryx Buffaloes and Chris Narveson of the Yakult Swallows. But of course, Narveson ends up giving up one hit. It was a home run to Aaron Baldarese after a walk, so he ends up losing the game. But that wasn't the game for me. The game for me was Tetsuto Yamada with the bases loaded and getting a grand slam to break the Japanese record for hits in a season by a right-handed Japanese player.
And his name begins with a T.
Yeah, I was going to say, we have to really work that out. You have to do all the, you have to show our work on these mathematics, but,
I know. We got to be extra Elias on here.
But the thing that, the reason it really stood out for me was because I just thought, well, you know, loading the bases and you get this little guy who's got all these hits and he's chasing this
record. He's a little guy and he's kind of a skinny guy. Yeah. He's got some bat speed, maybe.
But, and I just had finished telling somebody, well, he's not Derek Jeter. He won't do something like some kind of drama queen thing. And he hits a grand slam. So I thought that was
there
really
you go,
cool.
John Gibson.
I thought it was really cool, though. when if it's Derek Jeter, I didn't think it was very cool, but it was Tetsuto Yamada. So it was a really cool moment. All right, we'll talk about the free agents and in the major leagues. I know Hiroyuki Nakajima, Tsuyoshi Wada, Kyuji Fujikawa, Ichiro Suzuki, Norichika Aoki, and others are free agents, and maybe some of these guys will be coming back, and there'll be a lot of player movements that we'll discuss next week since we are way over time on this week's show. So thank you very much. Send any questions or opinions to yakyujohn@gmail.com or leave us a note on the Facebook page. The long show is a great season. Good job, Jim. Thanks. It was good having you back. And we'll talk to you next week, and then we'll figure out our schedule going forward for our Japan weekly podcast or bi-weekly podcast in the off season.
Wow. Okay.
All right.
Well, anyway, we'll look forward to talking to you next time.
All right. Enjoy your off season. One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.